Get ready to be mesmerized. Get ready to be entertained. Get ready to be informed. And most of all, get ready to listen. The latest sports news, great interviews, and the best coverage around the nation's capital. It's Listen In with KNN right now on AM 1340 and 96.9 FM Fox Sports Radio. Here's your host, Kelsey Nicole Nelson.
It's Wednesday, and with all that's happening in the sports world, I'd like to welcome you, yes, you, back for a second time this week for an all-new episode of Listen In with KNN. Yes, it's not Thursday, but guess what? With the NBA season just kicking off yesterday, you all are in for an explosive episode with a very, very special guest. We are going to go back in time and speak with a sports legend for the special Hoop Talk edition of Listen In with KNN. So sit back, relax, and get ready to listen in. As always, I love to start my show with Kelsey's Do Good Athlete of the Week segment. Now, my athlete this week is not pro, but I'm honoring her for the work that she's doing here in the DMV community. Like me, she's a Georgetown University grad school graduate from the Sports Industry Management Program, and I'd like to do my Do Good Athlete of the Week to Miss Ty Abelia. And I'm giving it to her because her organization, Hustle Hard Global Basketball, is throwing Hustle Hard for Charity Celebrity Basketball Game Saturday, November 11th. So mark your calendars, everyone in the DMV, because it will be at Trinity University from 1 to 5 p.m. Now, the reason I love this event is not because I'll be a part of it, not because there'll be so many cool celebrities in this area at the game. It's because every dollar of the money received will go towards helping Hustle Hard Basketball's initiative in Kenya. I think it's great. We see the NBA expanding over to China and Africa. And here we have a young female who wants to do more and give back and help give these kids an opportunity to play sports through basketball. It's going to be a great, 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 great event. So remember, 1 to 5 p.m., Trinity University out in Washington, D.C., Saturday, November 11th. Now, the price will be $20 for adults and $10 for students with your school ID. To find out more, visit them on Instagram at Hustle Hard Global. Use hashtag Hustle Hard for charity on social media. And they have some great sponsors in AM Pizza and the Mind Point Group. So it's just going to continue to grow. We're all coming together for a great cause. And I think more events like this need to happen. Let's help our fellow brothers and sisters. Just want to put a quick notice out there that there are still advertising and sponsorship opportunities available for this show right here. That's right. For listening with KNN, as well as live event opportunities. I'm pretty much doing it all. I would love your support. Advertise your business. Reach those people that you want to reach. Contact me at Kelsey Nelson at FoxSports1340AM.com. That's right, K-E-L-S-E-Y Nelson at FoxSports1340AM.com. Or contact me on social media at The Real K Nelson. Or you can get in contact with me through my website, KelseyNicoleNelson.com. All right, joining me today, I have a very special guest. The one and only Mr. Phil Chenier. Now, if you don't know about him, I don't know where you've been, especially in the DMV area, but he was drafted by the Baltimore Bullets out of California in the 1971 Hardship Draft. Chenier became one of the greatest shooters in franchise history. He averaged at least 12 points in each of his first 7 seasons. He was the second leading scorer on the 1975 team that advanced to the NBA Finals, that twice finished in the top 12 of MVP voting. If that's not enough, he remains in the franchise all-time top 10 in points, games, minutes, field goals, free throws, assists, and steals. Yeah, pretty much, you guys, he's done it all. He retired in 1981 at the age of 30. Chenier, who many call the Dean of Washington Game Broadcasters, got the Bullets' color job without an audition when Home Team Sports began its first full season of coverage back in 1984. And then, get this, he started there in 1984, and 33 seasons he worked calling the Washington Wizards games. Phil currently works as a CSN studio analyst on pre- and post-game shows and also does some work with Monumental Sports Network, which I'm really excited about, because he'll be doing a lot of content focused around the upcoming 40th anniversary of the team's only title. I cannot believe it's been that long. And he also will serve as an alumni ambassador and a representative for the team's alumni operations. Bill, welcome to the show.
Kelsey, thanks a lot. I didn't realize I was doing that much, so I'm glad you made those announcements, but it's good to be here. I'm looking forward to the season.
Well, thank you so much. I'm telling you, you've done so much. And the sad thing is I had to cut that. So there's so much that you're still doing. But just could you briefly give people about what you're currently doing now, just so people know, where can they hear more about you, Mr. Chenier?
Well, you know, I've been in this area since, as you said, 71. I've been on the East Coast. We started off in Baltimore. And then 2 years later, we made the transition to the Washington, greater Washington area. So I've been here. I live in Columbia. I've been here ever since. Raised three kids. And, you know, I'm kind of excited about watching my grandkids grow up and watch them develop and become hopefully – you know, contributing members of society. But, I've been with this organization for pretty much all that time, either as a mm-hmm. player or broadcaster, and it's been fun. It's been exciting. It's certainly been rewarding as well. So, you know, I'm looking forward to it. I also, living here in Columbia, we have a Howard County Player of the Week that we recognize in basketball. So it kind of keeps me in the local aspect of things, and we identify a player each week, and at the end of the month, we have a player of the month that will attend a game and get some other recognition. It's something that happened when I was in high school out in California, and I thought it was a good idea to do out here in Howard County.
Oh, that's wonderful. I think the local kids need that attention, and I think it's great someone like you who's played the game, especially at the pro level, is involved in something like that. And I think that just speaks to who you are, and that kind of leads me into my next thing I wanted to talk about with you and your background. I read on you that Mr. James Brown actually helped you get one of your first gigs announcing. So can you kind of talk about the importance of mentorship that you kind of just touched on?
Well, it's kind of interesting because we first met in college. He was going to Harvard and I was going to Cal Berkeley. We played against each other, and I was about 6'3", close to 6'4", and I was considered mm-hmm. a tall guard, and here he was at 6'6", and so I didn't think that was fair, but anyway, we developed a friendship and stayed in contact, and as my career was winding down, he was decided to get involved in broadcasting. So he asked me to come in and do a mock interview, and I did that. And we just stayed in touch. And then later on, after he got his feet wet and he was rolling pretty well, he was so busy he had a bunch of conflicts. So he called me and said, Phil, and I had stepped down, I had stopped playing for a couple of years mm-hmm. from college. And he said, I have a couple of dates where I may need you to fill in for me. Can you do that? And I was a little reluctant because I obviously never done it before.
Right, and you hadn't done it before.
It still wasn't like it is today. I mean, even the Bullets at that time were televising maybe 33, 34 of their 82 games. So, you know, there was no TNT. There was no TBS, there was no ES. Well, there were, I mean, they were, but they weren't doing games,
right.
You know, on a daily
like it
basis.
Is now.
Yeah, so I really had never given a lot of thought to that. But with a little encouragement from him, and, you know, I filled in there. Charlie Neal was the guy that was doing the play by play, and what a great person to work under to start
yeah.
with. Very encouraging, very supportive, and very helpful. And, you know, I did that for a couple of years, maybe doing anywhere between 8 to 10 games, depending on where JB needed some backup. And then in the third year, Paulette Johnson approached me and said, you know, the Bullets are starting a cable company, so you might be interested
wow.
in, you know, talking with Wes, because Wes was the at that time, Wes was, I believe, either coach or vice president. I don't know. But I
oh, wow.
spoke,
okay.
As you mentioned, so there wasn't really an audition required.
Right.
And because
you're at the right place at the right time, basically.
Yeah, yeah. It's better to be lucky than good.
Hey, but turned into 33 seasons, you know, which is simply amazing. I mean, I grew up, and so many people in this area grew up watching you. Now it's great that, you know, like, as you mentioned, you have grandkids now growing up in this area. But I have to ask, do you miss California at all?
I do. I do. I would love to get back there. I go back every year. So many great memories out there, growing up in high school, going to Cal Berkeley. A lot of my friends still have relatives out there. So I go out every summer, and actually about a month ago just got back from there. But, but home is here, too. I mean, I've gotten very comfortable. The East Coast has been very good to me. I have a lot of friends out here as well, and a lot of opportunities. So, and then again, like you said, with six grandkids, I'm not going to go to, and all of them in this area. Not going to go
too far. That is, right. You can't go too far, even though I'm sure they beg you every time you go to California to go with you. I mean, who wouldn't? Especially with the cold weather that we're getting here now. And one thing I forgot to mention in your bio, actually I was saving it because I think it's one of the best parts. Not only did you make three all-star teams, something recently happened where we found out that your jersey number 45 will be getting retired March 23rd. I mean, tell me first, how did you feel when you first heard that? And then at that point, how did you feel about hearing that from the Wizards' very own Bradley Beal?
Everything was surreal. It was a great moment for me. And every time I shared it with family members and friends, they are somewhat in awe, but it couldn't have been better. Obviously, Bradley Beal, he and John Wall will be leading this team, but Bradley kind of played the same position I did and came in. And over the last couple of months, the whole team has been very supportive. Scotty Brooks, the rest of the coaching staff, Ernie, as well as the players have been very supportive, respectful, and endearing themselves to me over this last year. So, you know, I've felt very good about the relationship that has been developed, especially with somebody like Brad. So we came in to do this mock interview, and we were doing something for Monumental. Unbeknownst to me, that was the pretense, and then the real step was to inform me that the number 45 would be raised with guys who all were teammates of mine. So it was a very special moment. It was exciting. It was done in such a unique and creative way that it will always hold a special place in my heart.
Oh, that is wonderful. I cannot wait to go to the now Capital One Center and see it up there. And I'm sure many Washington Wizards fans feel the same. And that leads me to transition into my next segment, doing it big in the DMV. And we talked about it. You kind of touched on the big name of the Wizards, but I want to talk to you about where you think they'll start this season and where they'll end. So last season, they finished 49-33, which was fourth in the division. So, of course, they have some new faces. They have Jody Meeks and Tim Frazier. But leaving was Bogdanovich, which I know a lot of people had really liked him last season, so I think that was one of the bigger losses. And, of course, Trey Burke. Now, John Wall had a $770 million contract extension, and, of course, the Wizards re-signed Otto Porter Jr. for $106 million. But tell me a little bit about where do you think the Wizards will finish this season as a team? Because people are saying the bench remains an issue for the Washington Wizards. And they don't know even now if they will be a 50-win team this season.
Yeah. Well, I mean, each year, and it was the same way for me as a player, I think you establish targets or goals for yourself and collectively for the group. And from everything I've heard from the players, starting with John and Brad, you know, they definitely want to get over that 50-win, something that hasn't been done since 79. Yeah. So their focus, John going into his eighth year, Brad going into his fifth, I think, you know, they are now, you know, seasoned players. They had to learn on the fly very quickly. But we have some other players that have been very solid and steady. But make no mistake, those two are marquee players. Those two are very special players. And every team, I don't care what position you're talking about, It could be LeBron with Cleveland. Could be Steph Curry and Thompson out there in Golden State. You know, any position, you have to have those special players that set themselves apart from other players, so that in order to contain them or to minimize their effectiveness, it's going to take the bulk of two, maybe three or four players to deal with them. That's going to create other opportunities for those teammates. And who are those other teammates? Right. Well, you mentioned Otto Porter coming off of his best year. It looks like
if he can shoot again like he did, I think the Wizards will be dead.
You know, that we'll see. You know, he tailed off the last two or three weeks of the regular season, but by no means should that say that he did not have a very good year. And I think that as a player, he's thinking about, okay, yeah, I played well and shot the ball at a pretty much a league high pace up until March. Now I want to do that through April, through the middle of April, you know. And
I think he needs to prove that, especially now with that contract.
Yeah, well, you know what? He earned it. And so that contract, he was in the right position, the right time. He made his talents known. There were other teams that were interested in him. Mm-hmm. And so a wise general manager, they don't want to see their players taken away from them. So it was kind of a no-brainer. The eyes pop out when you see some of these figures. But that's been going on for the last 50 years. Every two or three years, the salaries go up in player, and people, that's the most, they're not going to get paid. I mean, I'm going back to when I first played in the early 70s, and you started having a couple of guys making $100,000 a year.
Wow.
And that's more than the president's making. Okay, these salaries have to come down. Kelsey, they've never come down. And they
they just keep going up, up, up.
Yeah. So, you know, but that being aside, once you step out on the floor, if you're in the right frame of mind, you're not thinking about how much money I made, how much money I'm going to make. At that point, you're just thinking about being the best player you can be, dominating your opponent, and trying to win a championship. So I think that's what's going to be on Otto Porter's mind now. Maybe there is, probably is a little pressure to show a certain amount of followers that he's worthy of that. But, you know, the bottom line is he had to work over the summer to get himself even better than he was last year. My understanding is in training camp, he looked very good.
Right. That's what the reports have been. And this leads me to my next point. Another person that some people have questions about are Mr. Markieff Morris. Now, do you think he is can he be the sure scorer that the Wizards need? And on defense, can he be, you know, a solid defensive person to help protect the Wizards? I think defense kind of was one of their flaws last season. So hopefully they can be that 50-win team.
Kelsey, I think that Markieff, hopefully he responds and he recovers from the hernia surgery.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, he's going to be a little bit behind the eight ball when he comes back. But based on his overall skill, I think if he were to make a jump similar to what Bradley did last year, this team is going to be very special, because they're starting five with Marchand, Otto, and Mark, and John, and Brad. That was one of the best in the league last year when you look at their overall production.
Very solid.
I think you already mentioned the big question is the bench, and I guess we'll get to that in a minute. So getting back to Markieff, looking at what he brings toughness, but he brings versatility. He can shoot the three. He's not a Steph Curry, no. But he that you have to respect from outside, but yet he brings a physical game presence inside, not afraid to throw his weight around, not opposed to, you know, being a physical force inside. And then you have, you know, Marchand Gortat, the other big man. So again, I think that Markieff has the opportunity. It's a contract year. or coming up on it. If he has a very good year, there's a good chance that this team will probably try and lock him up for a number of years. Now, he's got a very good salary, very attractive salary by NBA standards, because now, I mean, when he signed his contract, it was a decent contract, but that was 3 years ago. So now you've got his, you know, more than double probably what he's getting. So it's a great opportunity for him. He has the physical tools that can provide, as you said, something that we need. That's the rebounding, the physical play inside, but he also can score. And, you know, today's players, all these players have to play at least two positions. Some are asked to sometimes play three. So they'll
It's no more one position you can just play in the NBA.
Yeah. So sometimes when if the team decides to go small, they might have Markieff at what we consider the five, and then have both Kelly Oubre and Otto Porter in there, or maybe you know, somebody else go with a three guard attack. But this league has become so versatile; it's hard to try to compare players today versus players of say 25, 30, or 40 years ago, because the game continues to evolve. Players are becoming more skilled. You know, there's some question about the fundamentals of the game because guys are coming in so early. But players are understanding that even if I'm 6'9 or 6'10, have to be able to knock down some threes, should be able to handle the ball, should be able defensively to switch out and for maybe a 4 or 5 second period stay in front of a guard. You know, those kind of things done years ago. So, you know.
I mean, I think you speak a lot to it. And obviously so many bigs, you know, shooting from behind the arc. But like you said, 30 years ago, you didn't expect that. Now it's expected. It doesn't matter if you're 6'9". You need to be able to shoot that three ball. And I think, you know, Anthony Davis is a great player that kind of shows that you kind of have to be able to play any point on the court and be able to hopefully lead your team to winning.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to be out there on the floor for a good amount of time, you have to show that versatility, and three-point shooting is a big part of the NBA game. Wasn't crazy about it when it started. My last year or 2 years, that's when they started it, and wasn't crazy about it. But now the league has adopted to it. Players have incorporated that in their game. You know, shooting a three now for some of these guys, it's like shooting a layup.
Like someone like Steph Curry.
That's right. They make it look easy, don't they?
They really do. I mean, I wish I could do it as simple as they make it look. And I think even now when you see young kids playing, they're not trying to go for the layups. They want to be Steph Curry, and they always want to shoot from behind the arc as well. So, I mean, people are eluding this, and that's, like you said, what they're going up to want to do. You need to be able to shoot that three ball. Now, this leads me to my next point. I mean, the bench.
Well, let me say one other thing, Kelsey.
Yeah, sure.
To bounce off that, but that goes back into the problem of the day. You have guys just try and do one thing. So, yeah, it's great to be able to shoot threes, but sometimes they're going to run you off that three-point line. You have to be able to put the ball on the floor. You have to be able to finish at the rim, you know. So all of those things, that's what the great players are doing. That's what the really good teams have players can do.
That's a great point, and this brings me to a debate I think that's been raging on with basketball fans. So do you think there is such a thing now as a true center in NBA basketball by NBA standards?
Well, I certainly think there's a place for a true center. It's all about setting your talents against another team's talent. So if you have a guy today that was like an Akeem Olajuwon, or say even like a Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who was traditional back to the basket center, you could find a way to use them. But you know, you have more players like you said that are so interested in facing the basket, not playing that center position, that you don't have as many quality guys that do that. But there are a couple of young players. I like the kid. He played at Utah. He's playing with the Knicks now, out of Kentucky. Anyway, very good post-up player. Kid before with Philadelphia, very comfortable with his back to the basket. Now, he can face the basket, too. But the point I'm getting at is that if you have a player that can do what he does and do it so well that it distracts and it dominates your opponent, then you got to use that. And then you work around that. So I'm not saying that the game has moved past dominant centers. It's just that you have so many other people trying to create other things that you don't have many players coming out doing that. But if you had one that could do that, you know, and like I said, if you had a Kareem Abdul-Jabbar coming out now, I don't care what team he was, he would be the number one option.
Right, because, of course, who he is. But I think you make a great point. Like you said, those players that are maybe true centers, they just kind of have to be in the right scheme, of course, with the right coaching, and it could work.
Right.
So that is wonderful. And now I want to move to something that some people don't think is so wonderful, and that's the Wizards bench. I think it's been a question mark for probably about the last three or four seasons, at least here in D.C. So I want to ask you, I mean, do the Wizards have a sure enough bench? As we said, we said the Wizards have a strong, solid five, but what does that mean if they can't rest? We've seen John Wall playing some of the most minutes in the NBA. So do you think that the Wizards organization did enough to strengthen this bench, and did the current players do enough this offseason possibly to get stronger as a bench?
You know, that's a big question mark. That remains to be seen. Now, one of the more impressive Wizards during the preseasons was Jody Meeks. Jody Meeks has been in the league for 8 or 9 years.
Right.
He's bounced around to a few teams, but what one thing you remember about it, this guy can shoot the ball, and he has shot the ball well during the season.
He made us remember in preseason, right.
What's that? That's a big plus, yeah. Mike Scott, another player that, you know, kind of like a Markieff Morris, about 6'8", strong, physical, but can play on the outside some. He has some experience. Tim Frazier. So they brought in some guys that have 4, 5, 6, 7 years of experience. Now the question is, will they come in? Will they be productive in their role as a backup player? Because you've got to come in and do that job. And it's not just, sometimes, and I do this, I get caught up in just looking at the offensive side of things. They also have to be solid on the defensive end, and that calls for...
People keep forgetting that, I think, in the NBA, that defense needs to be played.
Yeah, well, it calls for a collective measure from that second unit. So, you know, if you have that second unit in there, you don't have John that's all over the place just hawking the ball, coming up with steals. You don't have Bradley out there that's applying pressure. So, you know, you've got to get some other players in there that are working together, that are staying under the scheme that's drawn up defensively. We're going to run everybody to the middle. We're going to run everybody to the baseline. We're going to challenge the threes. We're going to protect the middle. Whatever the scheme is, you know, they're on the same page and they're working collectively as a unit to get that done so that when they do go out, you know, when the starters do go out, that, you know, you don't have your opponents making a 10-0 run or 8-2 run, and whatever advantage you have from your starters has been cut immediately.
Right, because then they have to come back in the game and work harder to get that game back up to the level they had it at before the bench went in. So I
have those guys playing all those minutes.
Exactly. And we talked about John Wall. We alluded to him, but I want to talk about him specifically because some people are already saying his name to be the MVP this season. Now, his name is up there with the likes of the usual people, your Kevin Durant, your Russell Westbrooks, and your LeBron James. But interestingly enough, ESPN.com, they used a special formula, and they actually thought Kawhi Leonard would be this year's MVP over Westbrook, Harden, and Davis. So tell me, do you think John Wall has what it takes to be MVP this season, or who do you think will be the league's MVP this season, just from preseason standards of what we've seen so far?
Well, it's easy to go for the players that you've already seen reach those. Kawhi Leonard's been an MVP, of course, Steph and LeBron. But
he's in that conversation every year.
What's that?
I said, right, your LeBrons are going to be in the conversation every year, it seems like.
Let's think outside the box now. You know, somebody has to fill those voids. If those guys don't have the kind of year, and I think back to maybe 10, 15 years ago, all of a sudden when Steve Nash seemed to come out of nowhere and won back-to-back MVPs, you know, nobody
That's a great point.
That year, you know, and certainly follow-up. So John, if he impacts the game, and one of the things he has to be aware of is that he can do things defensively that can have a major impact on the game, not just his shot blocking skills from a guard position, but his size, his strength, his quickness, his explosiveness defensively, packaged defensively, can be a huge asset for this team. And, you know, and Bradley's a very good defender too. So, you know, the two of them can put forth a very good perimeter defensive stance that can make things very difficult for opposing teams. So a lot of it has to do with how well this team does. If this team finishes, you know, with the top three or four records, and John has another one of those years, and defensively starts to get recognized as, you know, a guard that's defending and shutting people down and doing things, coming up with steals, coming up with blocks, you know, making big-time plays, you know, and the team does well, I don't see why he couldn't be.
Right, you couldn't write him off then. And I think I've said that about John. I think he's a great two-way guard. And I think this season, I really think he's put the city on his back. And like you said, if the team can come together and him and Bradley on that perimeter continue to protect and produce offensively, I don't think you can take his name out of the MVP race. And I think he wants it, so I think he's going to continue to fight for it.
I would agree with you. I think that's, and like I said, he's no different than any other player in that they come in each season. You set goals for yourself, team goals, group goals, and personal goals. There's nothing wrong with establishing personal goals.
I love that. And now, you know, I want to talk about the rest of the NBA because, of course, I had to start with the DMV since we're here in the DMV. But with the season kicking off yesterday and the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Boston Celtics, a big matchup that everyone was looking forward to. I mean, can Cleveland be dethroned still in the East? I mean, can anybody really give them a run for their money? Of course, they got Dwayne Wade. He's back with his buddy LeBron James. I mean, it seems like Cleveland literally just got stronger. They added Derrick Rose. I mean, can they do any wrong in the East?
Well, as long as they have number 23, LBJ there, they cannot do anything wrong. I mean, they have to be considered one of the top teams. That's not to say that they can't be dethroned, but they certainly have to be respected as one of the favorites. You know, it remains to be seen what Dwayne and D. Rose will bring. Both of them, especially D. Rose, has had, you know, real struggle. It's hard to imagine that it was only 5 years ago that Derrick Rose was the MVP of the league.
Oh, my gosh. Right.
Dominating.
He was just balling out like crazy.
Yeah. He was 23 years old, the youngest, one of the youngest, if not the youngest, MVP winners. And he's just had a slew of injuries, one after another.
The injuries, have just hurt him. And now people, you know, the first thing you think about is, will he get injured before you can even think about his talent?
Right.
That's why I think he'll have to get comfortable with his role out in Cleveland.
And, you know, it's because he's never played with somebody like LeBron. So he's going to have to share the ball some. How does that do him? Can he be that weak side spot up shooters during those times when LeBron is being the playmaker? You know, happens when Isaiah Thomas comes back, who is an exceptional scorer, you know, based on what we saw the last couple of years from him. So, I mean, they've got a marquee roster, no question about it. But
Thompson off the bench, Korver,
you don't know how that's going to fit together. I think the pickup of somebody like Crowder is a huge benefit.
That's a great point, and no one talks about that. I feel like
Yeah. I mean, they're going to be so deep. Didn't they pick up Jeff Green, too?
You know, I think they did, yep.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Cleveland, they did go wrong this offseason.
yeah. So they're going to be there. Now, Boston is the team that I think took a couple of steps back. And
yeah.
Nobody else is saying that because they like the addition of Hayward and
right. And Marcus Morris, Jason Tatum, Ricky.
Yeah, they've got
but
some.
I think you're right.
They've got some young players. One of them out of my alma mater, out of Cal Berkeley.
Oh, nice. So we are expecting big things from him then.
yeah.
But I want to ask you. I want to ask real quick about Cleveland. What do you think about Kevin Love at the five? I know there was a lot of questions around that. I mean, do you think he'll be solid at the five? I think he'll be pretty decent. I don't think he's not as big, but I think he gives you that quickness in that five position. But do you think, I mean, it'll work out in Cleveland, or do you think Cleveland just has their hands full and really aren't going to know how to put these pieces all together?
Well, I mean, time will tell how it works out, but so much is really centered around the fact that you have the greatest player in the game in LeBron James. So LeBron can be that shot blocker that Kevin Love obviously is not.
Right.
And the other thing, they're thinking, we're going to beat you offensively with Kevin Love at the five. We're going to have Kevin Love at the five. We're going to have LeBron. We're going to have D-Wade. We're going to have Isaiah Thomas, maybe Crowder. Maybe they go with J.R. Smith along with two other guards. I mean, so they're thinking offensively, they're going to throw so much scoring at you that, you know, you'll try to match up with them and maybe you'll break up your flow as an opponent.
Instead.
But teams trying to take advantage of it, especially if they have one or two good, solid big men in the low post that can, you know, make Kevin Love earn his money, so to speak. But, you know, here's a guy who, before he came, it's still kind of out because he had such tremendous numbers in Minnesota. But
right.
Obviously was Kevin Love. It really wasn't going towards a winning cause. So is he able to play that five in crucial time and not only, you know, take a big man, a center guy out and shoot threes or do what he's going to do to score, but can he defensively hold his own enough so that the advantage he's created offensively outweighs the disadvantage he'll have defensively?
Only time will tell. And I think, like you said, that's the big question. But if they can make him solid, then if you have Tristan Thompson, of course, coming off the bench, I really don't see any wrong Cleveland can do. And like you said, you're being led by the greatest player in the game right now. But I think a team a lot of people aren't talking about in the East is the Toronto Raptors. I mean, of course, Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan. I think people forget C.J. Miles shot 40% of three-pointers last season. Do you think the Raptors can make any noise in the East at all?
Yeah, that's a tough backcourt. But they've fallen flat in each of the last 3 years in the playoffs.
Right.
So they're not going to get the respect probably that they feel they should have. Through the regular seasons, they've been very good. They've been very solid. They've gone out there. I think they were one of the teams to go out there and beat Golden State out there in Oakland.
Right, it was crazy, yep.
Yeah. So they're going to be a dangerous team, no question about it. And depending on how they generate their rhythm, how they get some momentum going, you know, they've got to get some good play from their inside game. I mean, you know what you're going to get from those two, DeMar DeRozan,
Lowry, right?
But it's gonna take a little bit more depth. And they lost a good player when they lost Biombo, I think, who went down to where did he go to? Orlando, but he
right.
was an exceptional player. Gave us fits that 1 year in the playoffs, but. I find it hard for them to be rated in the top four.
Right. I feel like they're one of those teams that are always sometimes under the radar. They just, I don't think, have the full five pieces together starting to hopefully, you know, make some real noise in the East. But now I want to go to the West, and I want to talk about the team everyone's talking about, and that is the Oklahoma City Thunder. With the addition of Carmelo Anthony after getting Paul George complimenting Westbrook, do you think it will work, or do you think it's just too many personalities together who all want to take the shot?
I don't know, Kelsey, but it'll be fun to watch, no question about it, watching the three combine their skills and their talents. But it will come down to a point where they have to, each player probably will have to somewhat sacrifice at different times components based on the matchups that they want to attack and based on who has the hot hand, who's healthy, all of those things coming into it. And let's not forget, they've got to guard people as well. We know about, you know, we're talking about some really tough scores. Now, Paul George, to me, is one of the game's better defenders, period.
Yes. And he doesn't get enough credit for that, I don't think.
Sure does. I agree with you. So, but, you know, it's a new situation. A lot of people are saying, I sound like somebody else, but a lot of people feel like this is a one-and-done year for him, that after this year he's out to L.A.
That's what people are saying, though. They're saying, I mean, can the Thunder do enough to, you know, look forward to next summer and trying to keep these players? But that's what everyone's saying. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what they do. But I like that finally I feel like they can challenge, hopefully, the Golden State Warriors more. And then, of course, we have to talk about the Warriors. I mean, can they be stopped? Or do you already have them going to the championship, Phil?
I mean, I haven't seen any drop-off from that. And
nope.
The addition of Kevin Durant just makes that
playing lights-out basketball.
Makes them scary. I mean, and not just because he is another. I mean, you realize all three of those guys, it's very rarely on a team on a team that you have a player that can score possibly 50 points. They have three guys that have done that more than once.
Right.
So.
And they found a way to work together, which was, you know, everyone's big question.
Yeah.
They put together. And I feel like Kevin Durant might have an even stronger season. Like you said, they didn't lose anybody. So,
yeah.
I mean, the Warriors, I feel like it's hard to count against them in the West.
You can't do that. All you can do is look for some other teams that could have the potential to get hot and throw a curveball in there. You didn't mention Houston, and that could be a team that might, throw some
got
surprise.
Got curveball now.
Yeah. So it's going to be a real exciting and interesting year coming up to watch. We sit back in our rocking chairs and we sit, oh, this player, this team, this player. But until it's done and you reach April 15th or 16th, you won't know for sure who has the best team. And even beyond that, you get in the playoffs and anything can happen as well.
Very, very true. And you talked about the playoffs. So I want to go back to some of the new younger players real quick entering the league. I want to talk about who you think will be the Kia Rookie of the Year. So, of course, the front runners are De'Aaron Fox of the Sacramento Kings, the one and only Lonzo Ball of the Los Angeles Lakers, Markelle Fultz with the Philadelphia 76ers, Josh Jackson with the Suns, and Jason Tatum with the Celtics. Which one of those players do you think, from what you've seen this preseason, will be the Rookie of the Year? Markelle Fultz right now is the front runner for most NBA media personalities and writers' votes.
Yeah, my understanding is he's got a little bit of a sore shoulder, so he may miss a few games.
Yep.
But it's hard to say, and I haven't seen all. I just saw Lonzo Ball a little bit in the summer league, so I wouldn't even begin to try and make a prediction.
And he's also coming off injury.
That's right. So, I mean, it'll be fun to watch, but it certainly lends itself towards a lot of basketball talk in the barbershops.
I'm sure there will be a lot in the hair salons. I have to say, us women like to talk basketball, too.
I didn't want to leave the ladies out. Right.
No, I think that's great. And now I want to talk about some of the changes coming to the NBA game. Now, of course, there's a lot going on, Phil, with the national anthem in the NFL. But a big thing came out, I think, in September when Commissioner Adam Silver came out and said that players would be expected to stand for the anthem. Now, just tell me your general thoughts. I mean, when you were a player, I'm sure this wasn't a problem like it is now, but what is your overall thoughts of everything happening with the anthem? And do you think the NBA is handling it in the right way? And then last but not least, tell me, if not, how would you like to see teams allow players to express their thoughts maybe on this anthem protest?
That's a good point. First of all, let me say, in terms of football, like everybody else, I've been watching this, and I have my feelings about this, and it just seems so amazing how quickly the narrative was changed from, you know, really being concerned about social justice and the alarming rate that young black men were being shot down, and you know, law enforcement was not being held accountable for those bad judgments, mistakes, or just out-and-out bad judgment. That being said, you know, I don't feel like it's anything about the flag. I saw an article by Bob Costas, who was very, I just thought he made a very good point in saying that when did all of a sudden everything become about the military? You know, when you stand you allegiance to the flag, that's the overall country and
right.
and idea of the style, or not the style, but the high standard that we set for ourselves. But when we're not living up to that, then there has to be room for some type of objection and some type of statement to be made. And
okay.
I think that the idea of the kneeling was a good combination, respectful, but yet bringing attention to the issue.
Right.
So I find it to be the fact that the NFL doesn't have anything in their bylaws or their collective bargaining for them to say now that they're going to institute this fact, this rule, I don't know if they can do that. But obviously the NBA does have that in there.
Right, that's the difference with the leagues.
I would like to see the players, but let me say this. I went through a time and experience, and I'll go back to my college days at Cal.
Okay.
And they had a lot of different protests at Cal. Anybody that knows Cal knows what I'm talking about. But one year we had the Black Student Union issue. And they wanted more black students to have access to the university. They wanted more cultural classes for black history and whatnot to be taught and some other issues. So
right.
During the football season, it was starting to come to a head, but, you know, it didn't really take place until January when we got into basketball season. So you had a lot of people said, well, basketball players, they should protest. They should not play in the games, you know. So that was easy for, you know, them to say because they weren't involved. I think everybody
right.
has come to a comfortable area. Maybe comfortable is not the right word, because anytime you're protesting, it's got to be some discomfort involved.
Right. I think change is uncomfortable for people,
absolutely.
And that's why we're seeing this.
But I would like to see the players in the NBA, especially based on this current administration, that I would like to see you know, the players come to some type of guidance or some type of collective issue where they can pull together. I gotta believe that we're all on the right side, that we hate seeing people killed,
right.
you know, unjustly, and just to bring attention and say, hey, this has to be addressed, whether you're black or white. So
right.
it should be something that all the players can come together on and say, this is how we're going to be, you know, approaching this issue, and it's going to be solidarity between all the players, and this is our statement.
Okay.
I don't know how you do that. I really don't.
It's hard. It's a hard question.
Yeah.
I just wanted to ask you because you played, and I think that's the problem right now. There is no concrete answer that everyone will get behind. So the NBA recommended that teams address fans or show videos expressing the themes of unity before their first home games. But then, of course, they said you also have to remind them that players must stand for the anthem, so make sure the fans know that. But I guess it's hard, so I want to ask you another question. Do you think the NBA is facing more scrutiny because they are a majority African-American league? And I mean that, of course, by the players in the league, like the NFL. Do you think they're being held to a, you know, a different standard? Because I feel like we're not seeing this in NHL, for example, right? Or, of course, Major League Baseball. So do you think, I mean, does the NBA need to be on the forefront of this issue?
Well, yes, I think the league has to, because the players are now much more, I mean, obviously everybody thinks about that collective meeting with those great African-American players, athletes with Muhammad Ali. But nowadays you have players, a lot more players, and they have even more say-so. They have even more leverage. I mean, think about all of the black players in the NBA that, you know, and I think the league has somewhat set this up by establishing their constant face in the community. Okay, so, and they endorse that, and they encourage the players to be involved in their communities. Well, now you have an issue in the community that needs address and need to be stood for.
And it's not an African-American issue. I always say it's an American issue, and and that's why, you know, players are trying to bring attention to this.
Good point. It is an American issue. So,
and I don't think showing just videos to fans, I honestly don't think that's enough, you know, just to try to get players to express their thoughts through that way. So it'll be interesting to see, like, I don't know if you remember last season, I think it was, when the players wore the I Can't Breathe shirt.
Yeah.
You know, that was kind of one of their ways of protest. I mean, would you want to see maybe more stuff like that if they can't participate in the anthem kneeling protest?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think the NBA also has a clothing guideline so that they quickly
after the incident.
Took that option away from them, too. I think that was only done. I don't think it was more than one game. If it was only two games where they wore those shirts. But again, I really you know, commend the players today for being more involved and being more astute of community and policies and conditions that are going on in this country, in their communities, and trying to be a voice of leadership.
I think that's wonderful. And I mean, I think the big news that came out this week was LeBron James was on the cover of GQ. And besides the great pictures that came out, I mean, he talked about everything. He talked about, you know, how this protest kind of affects him as a father. I mean, he talked about the killing of unarmed black men in the article. And he said he reflects deeply, really, because he's a father to three children. He talked about his tweet to President Trump regarding the Warriors visiting the White House. I mean, there's just so much going on. But he said he feels responsibility as a leader and a role model. And I think we're seeing that more and more in athletes. So hopefully we find an answer. We get along, because I think genuinely, especially in sports, I think it's one of the great platforms to hopefully unite us all. So we will see what's yet to come. And see, we have to end this show on a positive note. But Phil, I have to thank you so much for being my guest. It was such a fun show. It's great having a legend like you in here. And hopefully soon the Wizards will be, you know, hoisting another banner up in the Capital One Center. So you have something else to be proud of with this organization.
Wait, Friday, March 23rd, that's the date. And I'm looking forward to it.
Yes, when yours goes up.
Yeah,
I look forward to being there to see that. That's going to be such a great – I mean, do you already know who you're bringing with you? Do you have family coming in town? I mean, have you even planned that far yet?
Yes, I've thought about it, but I've got to kind of put a list together. And so, yeah, but whatever happens, it'll all be for the good. That's the way I'm looking at it.
It will be great. And one quick question I have to ask you that actually someone wanted me to ask you is, do you think it would be good if the Wizards could go back to playing some games in Baltimore?
Absolutely, it would be good. But, you know, I mean, the team's identity is in Washington, D.C. now, especially with the Capital One Arena being right in the heart of it. So I don't know if that's going to be the case. I'm a little biased because that's obviously where my first 2 years we played, at the old Civic Center downtown. And it was a great surrounding. Obviously, it didn't, you know, the arena then, that was 40 years ago, almost. So really, the arenas didn't have what the arenas have now. The game has progressed, but so has, you know, the way, the means of marketing the game and selling the game and enjoying the game. So, but Baltimore is a great town. I would love to see, if nothing else, some preseason games being played there. And, you know, who's to say they couldn't, you know, tear off a game or two and have it in Baltimore?
I think it would be exciting. So, you know, Baltimore, keep hope. You never know. Phil and I are rooting for it. And for everyone listening, thanks so much. That's a wrap for this edition of Listen In with K&N Sports Talk Podcast. I hope you had fun, learned something, and, of course, jumped in on the K&N bandwagon. Be sure to listen in each and every Thursday morning and sometimes a special Wednesday when a new show drops online at FoxSports1340AM.com. If that's not enough, the show is available for download as well on iTunes and Google Play. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review. Your feedback and support matter. Until next week, enjoy the sports world. Smile and don't take your fantasy sports too seriously because there's always another play.
Follow Kelsey on Twitter at TheRealKNelson. You've been listening to Listen In with KNN on AM 1340 and 96.9 FM Fox Sports Radio.